sounds of material enjoyment or suffering, it's difficult to say which. You might want to start recording. Instead of giving a regular Srimad Bhagavatam class, this morning I'll give a different form to the Krishna Katha, discussing some project in mind, and then after that we can have some questions and answers. There's devotees wanted to ask me some different questions, so want to ask something? Some others also, so we can just have a general questions and answers session. So the project in mind, something I've been thinking of for many years, but seems that now it may be able to. Now means in the upcoming months and years, may be able to take a practical shape. Is an academy for what from our lower perspective may be considered higher studies of Vaishnavism, philosophy, and culture, for study, for research, for teaching, for writing books, there's a need for this. Everything we need to become fully Krishna conscious is in Prabhupada's books. There's also, Prabhupada left us a whole universe of Vaishnava culture to reveal to the world as far as possible. There are also many or most persons in the world don't have faith in Prabhupada's books. And Prabhupada himself speaks of research, for instance, in one purport, in the third canto. Just a short purport, he said that this statement can be the subject of great scientific research. Just for instance, one area is that here in South India, we find there are sometimes challenges or doubts expressed by persons from other Vaishnava sampradayas, not to speak of the Mayavadis. And these are not only in South India, these are also out on the internet. And sometimes people, they blaspheme Prabhupada. Just yesterday I got an email saying that why does Bhaktivedanta call his Bhagavad Gita as it is, and then at the end of each chapter say, thus end the Bhaktivedanta purport. It's his purport. Actually, Bhaktivedanta here may mean A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, but it also means it's the name, it's not just a name, just like some may get a name, Samir, Sumit, some name like this, Sentil, some such name, but the name is full of meaning. So the Bhaktivedanta purport means that the purport is revealing bhakti as the summit of all Vedic knowledge. So when you say the Bhaktivedanta purport, it doesn't mean only written by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, but it means the purport that reveals what Krishna said, as it is, that bhakti is the ultimate level of all knowledge. That's why for great personalities, nam and nami is a bhinna. Krishna is not just a name, but he is Krishna, he is all attractive. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he's not It's not just a name, but he is Bhakti Siddhanta. His whole being is non-different from the Siddhanta of Bhakti, which is Bhakti. And he is Saraswati, in as much as Saraswati is always, he is a manifestation, or he is Saraswati, in as much as everything he speaks is. It's not just some mental concoction, but it's directly spoken by Saraswati, the Shuddha Saraswati, who is always glorifying Krishna. So in the same way, the name Bhaktivedanta is not just some name that someone decided to give. Just as Agnidev presented Krishna the Sudarshan Chakra, so one of Prabhupada's godbrothers gave Prabhupada the name Bhaktivedanta, which is his eternal attribute and name. So like this, it's just an example, one of the many. There are so many challenges which require to be met, and that's not all. That in itself is a huge area, showing how Gauriya Siddhanta is actually Siddhanta. Others, they may be called Siddhanta, but real Siddhanta means Purna, complete and perfect. Whereas whatever else goes under the name of Siddhanta is only Angshan or partial. So to demonstrate that is not a small job. That requires much research and understanding and appreciation of what the Acharyas have given. So this project is not for intellectual aggrandizement, although it will also serve the purpose of engaging intellectually minded persons who've come to Krishna consciousness, instead of running off to some mundane university to get to write PhD thesis in language language acceptable to the karmis. They can write PhD thesis, or not. It doesn't require to be written as PhD thesis. It can be written in the language acceptable to the acharyas. So, like everything else that is done in Krishna consciousness, this must be done as a service to the acharyas, to uphold the dignity of our acharyas, to demonstrate to the world who are these tremendous personalities. Prabhupada said, if you want to know me, then read my books. And Prabhupada's books are unlimited. And we have our previous acharyas, how much they've written, especially Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how much he wrote. It's just phenomenal, especially considering that he was a congregational devotee. As there would be, of course, there was no institution, like full-time, there were no full-time devotees. There were Babaji's who didn't write books, hardly. So he had a full-time job at a big firm. He wrote so much in all different genres, what's another word for that, all different types of, he wrote novels and very sharp or tight philosophical works, his songs, so many, and the whole Vaishnava philosophy and the whole spiritual world is in, Prabhupada said the whole spiritual world is in the song Jai Radha Madhava, so what, there's only four lines, so what to speak of all the other, it's just staggering, even from our conditioned perspective, even a little awakening of Krishna consciousness, we can begin to appreciate what are the gifts of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So staggering. Then so many works of our acharyas, they have to be translated into different languages as far as is possible, because the English and other Western languages are not very suitable for expressing the works of the previous, anything written in, especially the Vaishnava works, which are written in Sanskrit and other Indian languages. So the works of our acharyas, they also need to be translated. They're mostly written in Bengali and Sanskrit, our Gaudiya Vaishnava works. They also need to be translated into other Indian languages, because they don't know what is the treasure house of the Gaudiya Acharyas. And also, the works of acharyas of other sampradayas, they should also be translated into all the different languages of the world. It's not that we are in attempting to show the glory of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's, or that what he has given is indeed unatajvala rasa, the topmost representation of rasa. And rasa itself is, what is rasa? The Gaudiya Vaishnava, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching, the presentation of rasa, which is on the very highest level. So it's not to present Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings as the topmost is not in a spirit of competition or denigration of the great acharyas, Madhva, Ramanuja, and others in their lines and other Vaishnava lines, but also in service to them, understanding them to be also great devotees of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and that their contributions are also of tremendous benefit to the world. So all this needs to be brought out in the form of millions of books, and not only millions of books, but millions of persons who are imbued and inspired with the knowledge in those books to go from place to place, or stay in one place, whatever, and speak the knowledge in these books, so that and behave as Vaishnavas, so that by their activities and their speaking, others can also take to Krishna consciousness. So that's only one area, is establishing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness among the other sampradayas and showing the glory of our acharyas, translating books. So those are some different areas, but that's only part. There are also so many modern philosophies or misphilosophies which are misleading people, and they're also presented in a sophisticated manner, so that the people of the world are misled by so many different wrong philosophies and it seems to them that they are right. The empiric method, adhyakshik vritti, or the that appears to be the to mundane people to be axiomatically correct. So what are the defects of that method? That has to be pointed out and vigorously campaigned against. And alongside with that, by taking up their method, it can be shown how their conclusions are also incorrect. For instance, they persons who are addicted to the empiric method, they mostly take it as axiomatic that, just to give one example, one or two examples, that this is modern academia. They are promoting all over the world, the two things go on side by side, that women and men should have exactly the same social roles. There should be no distinction whatsoever. And that those who do, and that homosexuals should be fully accepted within society, and that there should be no discrimination against them, and whatever they want to do as homosexuals, that should be considered quite proper and normal and acceptable. So these two agendas, they go on side by side. Women's lib and gay rights, they're going on side by side. They're being promoted by the intellectuals, so-called intellectuals, all over the world. And they're not content with that their own society at home is messed up, which they presume is more advanced, but they're determined to bring it into the what they call the less developed world also. And they presume that anyone who doesn't agree with this, they call it homophobia, if you don't agree with homosexual rights. And the way they write their reports, it's understood that they just take it for granted that anyone who doesn't accept this, anyone who's not in favor of accepting homosexuals as completely normal persons with every right to be supported by society in their demoniac activities, that anyone who thinks that such activities are demoniac, that they are wrong, they are living in an old world kind of consciousness, they're unreasonable, they're unfair, etc., etc., etc. So, most of the people of the world, having gone through the modern education system, presume that this, the methods that these demoniac scholars take up are correct. That they do analysis and they make social studies, and they go on to show that homosexuals are actually normal people and in every way, just one thing different, but like this. So these things have to be argued against, at least within our Vaishnava society, as there is now being promoted within our Vaishnava society, not surprisingly, just after the women's liberation movement, comes the gay rights movement, and it's being promoted within Vaishnava society. So to protect Vaishnava society from attacks from within and from without by the modern academic approach, it's required that not all devotees, but at least some devotees, become expert in that modern academic approach. Actually, some of our devotees started going back to university with the idea of learning that academic approach so that they could introduce Krishna consciousness within the universities, but instead they're introducing the academic misconceptions within ISKCON. They became converted. They didn't convert the mundane scholars, they became converted. At least it appears. Some of them, definitely. So, and they also just presume the same thing. If you don't agree with them, then you're just some misfit who doesn't really understand. And the worst thing is they start to reinterpret the teachings of Shastra. and what Prabhupada said and all these things. So it's a very dangerous situation. And they say, they'll say, well, Shastra says this, but you have to understand, and they'll make so many reasons why that was for a different society at a different time, a different place, or we can't accept everything Shastra said. We can accept the spiritual teachings, but the material teachings are not known. So in this way, they undermine the very basis of Krishna consciousness, which is yasya deve para bhakti tata deva, yata deve tata deva, tasya aite katita hiyata prakasham deva mahatmanaha. The faith in Guru, Bhagavan, and Shastra is undermined. We have to understand their teachings with our intelligence, which is true, but that intelligence means the intelligence which follows Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, not which tries to supersede Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So by understanding by intelligence doesn't mean that we adopt an empiric method. So some devotees have to become expert enough to counter them in their own language and on their own grounds, inside and outside. Outside may also be required, definitely will be required, because now it's quite likely that soon in many countries in Europe, they're going to bring laws that religious institutions, if they don't give full rights to gays, such as allowing their marriage within the church and all this, that they will lose their tax status, and they may be fined or closed down. This is the way the world is going. So how to defend that? We have to consider. The way things are in our society at the moment, I wouldn't be surprised if they just went along with it. If they just compromised with it, right? Oh, well, otherwise we'll have to close our temple and we'll have to pay tax and all this kind of thing. So our movement, as far as we see at the present time, is not committed to principles, it's committed to a so-called pragmatism. So we want to develop a class of devotees who are learned and at the same time fully committed. Learned means not that you fill your head with this nonsense, mundane ideas from the demoniac scholars at the university, but living among devotees living with the acharyas by constantly studying their works with full faith in the acharyas, those who are fully committed to the message of Krishna consciousness and to not compromise in any way, such persons who can go out in society and without any fear of their name or position or what others will think of them, will speak the truth, and not in a manner that can be perceived as dogmatic or fanatical, but in a manner that any person who is actually sadhu, shinvanti gayanti grinanti, they will hear, accept and repeat. Those who are actually purified men who are thoroughly honest will actually accept such conclusions. If persons are actually neutral and scholarly in the sense of not having, not being biased, that they will accept these conclusions. So that's another. There's so much work to do, preserving the Vaishnava culture in so many areas. Music and dance is a very great area, which is at the very heart of Krishna consciousness. So a lot of that is being lost. What to speak of so many manuscripts being lost, ancient manuscripts. So there's so many areas of Vaishnava culture need to be preserved. So that's another huge area. How much we can do remains to be seen. All over India there are different schools of Vaishnava culture. In Bengal there's so much. The Bengali people themselves are quite unaware of the exaltedness and the depth of their Vaishnava culture. Even most Bengali Vaishnavas, they don't have much idea of what is the depth of the teachings of their acharyas. And in Orissa there's so much Vaishnava culture which is people hardly know about. At least people know something about Bengali Vaishnava, what we call Bengali Vaishnavism, due to the endeavors of Srila Prabhupada, something. But in Orissa there's so much also. Manipur, just a few days ago in Manipur, there an ancient library with thousands of manuscripts, ancient manuscripts, was burned by some tribal terrorist movement, because the Manipuri is written in Bengali script, so they're against Bengali script, so they just burn the whole thing, irreplaceable. So, what other things? So many things. If you start to think, there are so many things to do. Nowadays it's quite popular in our movement, interfaith conferences, in which devotees go and they talk and they try to understand how wonderful is Christianity and all this kind of thing. But we should show in a dispassionate manner that will be heard, sung and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest, that actually Krishna consciousness is real religion. And anything else isn't really religion at all. For a start, if you don't know what is the distinction between spirit and matter, which is the first teaching in Krishna consciousness, then even if you talk of God, then your concept of Him must be material. From the very beginning. And then if you think of God as your order supplier, then it's not bhakti. That we have to do some service to Him with the idea of getting something back. It's a totally mundane concept. So it's not difficult to show this, actually. So, but it should be shown. It should be. All this work has to be done. So there's a lot of work to do, and I've had it in mind for many years. But it seems, I haven't spoken much about it because there's not much use in talking unless there's something positive can come out of it. So, I think the only one here, you know Krishna Kirti, but I don't think anyone else here knows him. He's becoming quite well known all over ISKCON for his scholarly daily analyses of various attitudes within ISKCON, showing how various things, especially this, the social, commenting on the social direction of ISKCON. Anyway, I proposed to him that he come back to India. He's from America, from a genuine, real American background. White, his father was an army officer, so real American background. But he was in India for some time, his wife is Indian. So he's agreed to come back after Gaur Purnima, and then we'll start working. Oh, another important thing I failed to mention was that Sanskrit has to be very much central to this. Because if we're going to talk about analysis of Shastra, and then knowledge of Sanskrit has to be there. You can't just rely on someone else's translation. Someone agreed with that. That's something else we could look into, the science of omens. There's so many areas of Vedic. That's an omen. If the tick-ticky goes tick-tick-tick-tick-tick, that means what you said is confirmed. At least in Bengali. Jaya Chakramaraj told me once that there's something in Mahabharata about that. I don't know which edition of Mahabharata, but maybe somewhere. So, there's so many things. The science of omens, the science of physiognomy, so many things. To show that the Vedic culture, there's everything we need for human society. We don't need to study the DNA patterns in mass murderers to try to stop the phenomenon of mass murder. We don't need all this. For instance, they're studying now. Harvard University is going to spend $50 million working on trying to change attitudes towards women in science within their university, because earlier this year the principal of the university or something said he was giving a speech on why analyzing the phenomenon that at higher levels of science we find very few women. And he said as a suggestion that we might consider that maybe genetically women have less aptitude for this area of study, which caused a huge storm to even suggest that it might be possible that women in a particular area of study might have less aptitude. Caused a huge furor, so he had to sanction $50 billion to try to rebut, for research to rebut his own. Well, he only made it as a suggestion. I mean, if someone suggests that men are less capable of women than bearing women, of children, no one would protest that there are differences between men and women. But they just don't want to accept that even the possibility. So instead of spending $50 million to study, make studies, then you just go to the Vedic culture. Everything that we need to know for human society is that we have to show them. That is required. Yeah, so I was saying Sanskrit is also very important. And there are many other areas also. Our plans are not at all solidified yet. We have to see. Krishnakirti Prabhu himself has always been a great proponent of bringing Western devotees to India and having them learn Indian languages for preaching. And so he wants to incorporate that. He started a preaching center. It's a part-time job because he has a full-time job in one city where he's living. And he made one devotee, very bright young man, and he sent him to India for learning Hindi. So he's very much into that. So we have to see. We're talking about higher levels education, but we also want to prepare devotees. They should be on a higher level so that they can teach devotees at what we might, for want of a better term, we say lower level. Any teaching about Krishna consciousness is perfect and absolute and complete. So, and we shouldn't think that someone who is very learned in Shastra is necessarily a better devotee than one who isn't. At the same time, it's required for preaching that some devotees be very learned in Shastra. Prabhupada wrote that in a lecture, in a letter, around 1972 or something. Wrote that. Now it is required that some of our devotees become very learned in Shastra. And that point I say about the other sampradayas, they'll never take us seriously unless we have something to reply. They say, well, what about your Radha? They say, how can we accept? So we have to show. We have to show in Sanskrit. And unless we can deal with them in Sanskrit, they're never going to take us seriously. So Sanskrit should be... Yeah, so we don't have any fixed plan, but Krishnakirti Prabhu, I'm suggesting to him that when he comes back to India, then we can start to discuss and think, and we're already doing that, but in more detail. The first thing, he should learn Sanskrit. He's already started right there in America. He knows some Hindi. And then we have to decide a venue. Actually, we should have many centers all over India, because we need one for dealing with, one for Karnataka or Kannada speaking area, so that we can, because so much literature is there in Kannada language that we want to translate, and so much of our works we want to translate into Kannada, and so much of the local culture we want to understand. And you're like that in Tamil, in Bengali, very much needed, in Oriya. So we need many centers, but we'll start with one center and we'll see how it develops. Where we have to consider the pros and cons of different places. And how it will develop, we'll see which men come forward for training, who is there, what are their desires also, because different, you can't just, you can do, but it won't be as effective if you order someone that you take up this area of study. But if they have a particular interest in a particular area, they may, it may be better to direct them in that area. And there's unlimited work to do, so we'll see. It will require place and some money. Those who are studying can live very simply, but then for propagation, we'll need computers. We don't need electricity for anything else, but we may need computers for propagation and writing and all those things. And although those participating in this will be expected to live very simply, taking pleasure in higher level than sensual level, practically unlimited funds could be used for collecting books and manuscripts. There should be a large research library, which may have all kinds of books of my, apart from books of devotees, books of Mayavadis, books on psychology and psychotherapy and all kinds of things, all areas of knowledge, history and so many things. So that in itself could be a lifetime job for many scholars, just assembling a library. So there's a lot of work to do, and it may take many years to develop, just like in Mayapur, the school of Vidya Purna Maharaj, he's developing it over many years. He didn't have a free hand to do that for many years. He has a few men with him who understand what he's doing. So it may take many years or many lifetimes, but it's required that our movement have such, actually, our movement should have many such branches, and gradually our movement is waking up to the need for study. But to date, our movement has put a lot of emphasis on very widespread preaching, with collecting many people and collecting lots of money and building temples and projects, but there hasn't been much encouragement for the intellectual life or traditional scholarship. I was sent from the website of Gopi Puranadana Prabhu. It was like an advertisement. The front page, he said, "Why be an academic scholar? Be a natural scholar of Srimad Bhagavatam." That's also academic, but the word academic has been hijacked by the mundane academicians. So there hasn't been that much interest or encouragement for that. I'm hopeful that if we do start this, that we may attract devotees from all over the world who are interested in serious study and research with the aim of serving our acharyas. It's definitely a very specialized service. It's not for everyone. I mean, one qualification is required is a scholarly attitude. Not everyone has a scholarly attitude, and we can't expect that. And another thing is sufficient intelligence. It requires some intelligence also. So But we're hopeful this may be successful. It may require, I say it may require lots of money and a place and organization, but most of all it requires the people who have the vision for this. So if there are only one or two, then they can start, and things can start to develop. We see in course of time, it, like everything else in Krishna consciousness, it depends on Krishna's mercy, how everything will proceed. I mentioned the school in Mayapur, both the Vidya Purna Maharaj and the fledgling school at Govardhan, or Gopi Pranadana Prabhu's. Fledgling school means that he's there, and they have a syllabus which is based on Srimad Bhagavatam, and they don't have a building as a school, they don't have a fixed premises. So they're just beginning and getting organized. That may take some time. So we may say, well, what's the need of this school? Is it in competition with them? Or? No, we have the highest respect for them, and it's certainly not meant to be in competition with them. And I hope that if by the grace of Krishna and Srila Prabhupada this project does start to develop, which I'm hopeful that it will do, that we can have very nice interactions with these two schools. But our purpose will be a little different. In Vidya Purna Maharaj's school, the same idea, that Vedic culture, higher learning, but they seem to be more focused on rituals and preserving that aspect of the culture. Vidya Purna Maharaj himself is, I know, very interested in music. So those aspects that they emphasize on more, we may not ourselves emphasize on so much. Although, for instance, if we do set up in South India, and then we may get into South Indian aspects of music. It's not really South India, we're talking about Vaikuntha, this culture, but India is has traditionally been the an outpost of Vaikuntha, or where, from where one, it's the bus stand to Vaikuntha, something like that. I saw this flyer they have for the Bombay project, book your place in Goloka, but actually you can't book your place by giving some donation. So it's not that just by giving a donation to building a project, a ISKCON Juhu, one is guaranteed, you've booked your place, you have a right to go to Golok. It's not, if it was so easy, then, you know, I'd go out and get a lakh of rupees and give it too, if it was, but it's not a matter of purchasing it. So also being born in India isn't a guarantee to go to Vaikuntha. Many people in India who have taken birth, who will take birth in future, are unfortunately going in exactly the opposite direction. But what is called Indian culture is the actual culture that is a preparation for adopting the culture of the spiritual world. So when we say South Indian music or South Indian cooking or whatever, what we really mean is that aspect of Vaikuntha culture which has been manifested at the present time in South India. And that should be understood. So we also want to preserve all these things, although, like I said, we can work in tandem, you know what that means? Cooperatively, side by side. Tandem bicycle is a bicycle for two. Two people sit and they both pedal. So that word came up, in tandem, that phrase. So like, and Gopi Pranadana Prabhu's school, that is focused on studying Srimad Bhagavatam and training people so that they can have a very good, very solid background in understanding Srimad Bhagavatam as Srila Prabhupada has given it and as our acharyas have given it, which they understand as the basis for any further study. So we might just send everyone there first of all. They study Sanskrit also. But But the Sanskrit, as Gopi Pramodanvaru explained, it's our aim and object is not teaching Sanskrit, but teaching Srimad Bhagavatam. So maybe we should just send everyone there first. But this school that we're thinking of, it's particularly, its emphasis, although not exclusively so, but its emphasis will be establishing Siddhanta in the face of all opposition and doubts. So this is particularly focused on preaching, although it may be a very specialized form. Prabhupada wanted this. He set up the BI, Bhaktivedanta Institute, as an institute for interacting with and establishing proper understanding within the fields of science and philosophy. That he wanted it in philosophy is not so well known, as it appears that he himself emphasized more on the science side. But he also said that it should be for science and philosophy. So there are some ideas. Like I say, it's very much at the ideational standard, ideational platform at the moment. But we seriously intend to give that solid shape within the upcoming months and years. And there are other devotees also who are interested in this project, interested to the extent that they may actually contribute in by teaching, donating, helping to arrange donations and so on. Most of all, we need people to take it up. So maybe some of the devotees, there are some devotees who I'm thinking of who may get involved in this. Nityananda is here, yes, I'm thinking of him possibly. Music side already, Krishna Kirtan is going ahead with that. I know Gokul Chandra is interested in this kind of thing. We've talked about this kind of thing, maybe not in such detail. Although I don't think Gokul Chandra himself is the person who's going to sit down and study for years on end. But certainly some involvement. Yeah. Then I spoke with Vidvan Gauranga in Mayapur this year. He'd definitely be a very good asset for this. But we have to see if he'll come along. Another disciple of mine, who you may have seen him in Vellore earlier this year, Bharat Ram. He's studying. I'm sending him off to Govardhan for studying with Gopi Pramodanvaru. He's very much into learning Sanskrit, and now he's getting interested in music also. So he's also very capable. So like this, there may be others also. At least we have some people who we can think of who could start to get into this. Oh, another thing I was saying, a different level, and this is also very important, who can teach others. We're talking about education. At all levels of our society, there's much need of education, and in all aspects of Krishna consciousness. Starting from the very beginning, Komara Acharat Pragyo Dharman Bhagavataniha. The children of our devotees, there is no devotional Bhaktivedanta educational alternative for them. We don't have any real gurukuls in our society. The only thing we can offer is slaughterhouse education. So at all levels we need education. So but those who are teaching, they should also be on a high level. Actually, children from a young age, if they're educated from a young age in a proper manner, they can pick up this philosophy very sharply and very nicely, but the teachers themselves have to understand it very... It's, if one is teaching on a primary level, he shouldn't be himself on just a slightly level above. He should have a very deep understanding, because even on the primary level, the principles have to be understood. If one has a misunderstanding of the principles, then from the very beginning, everything's going to be off. It won't be proper understanding. So it's required that the teachers themselves have a proper understanding. For instance, if you go to a Bhakti Shastri course and the teacher teaches you that Yukta Vairagya means, for instance, if you have a desire to eat halava, you don't just cook it and eat it, but you cook it and then you offer it to Krishna and then you eat it, and that's Yukta Vairagya. If the teachers themselves have such misconceptions, and that's Yukta Bhog Vilas, that means you... There's no Vairagya. That could be called Karma Yoga, but it's not Yukta Vairagya. It's not Bhakti. So, if the teachers themselves have such misconceptions, then what hope is there for the students? Everything should be very clear. There should be a body that becomes known and respected for establishing what is proper siddhanta. This is very much lacking in our society. I mean, people don't even know how to discuss. They people put out all kinds of faulty arguments, and because people, they don't know even what a basic logical argument is, that people can put out all kinds of illogical propositions. And people say, oh yeah, okay, that's right. Recently, just a few days ago, someone put out a long text which was aimed at myself and Jayadvaita Swami, and put it out all over the Wincom system or Pamho system, in which one of his tremendous conclusions was that anyone who doesn't agree with his interpretation of Srila, any sannyasi who doesn't agree with his interpretation of Srila Prabhupada must therefore be secretly stashing away money with the aim of buying a house in the French Riviera. Because Hari Kesh did that, and he was off, and you're off, so that proves that you must be doing that. So this kind of logical conclusion is heard, sung, and accepted by unpurified persons who are thoroughly dishonest. Now that's the kind of low level of philosophical discussion we have in our society at present. Which is maybe one reason why people, they don't, you know, those who know what the right philosophy is, they don't want to stand up and say. Because you become subject to all these straw man ad hominem arguments. You know what that means? Straw man, you should have to learn all this. Straw man means where you say, so and so said this, and then you defeat their argument. But you never said that. You reinterpret what they say, and then you smash it. It's called a straw man. Oh, see, I defeated him. He didn't say that. And ad hominem means just to call people bad names and presume you're right, and just by derogatory remarks try to show that you are correct and they are wrong. So like I say, these kind of things are heard, sung, and accepted by unpurified persons who are thoroughly dishonest. But we need to raise the cultural level within our society. So it's not an easy thing. We're in the age of Kali, about which Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati has written, Sri Bhakti Margeha Kantaka Koti Ruddha. In this Kali Yuga, the path of bhakti is beset with innumerable thorns. So it's not an easy task, but persons who are sincere, they may appreciate. So that's just something I wanted to share with you, as there is some beginning on that line here. This center is an educational center. Its arrangements are being made for the devotees to study Prabhupada's books very seriously, and devotees are being encouraged in that. And the people we're preaching to also, we want to see that they become, the endeavor is going on here, that we don't just bring them in, slap some tilak on them, put a bead bag in their hands and give them initiation name and that's it. But we want to see that people are actually understanding what is Krishna conscious and taking to it very seriously. So like that, the emphasis should be on shiksha more than diksha. If there's shiksha, then diksha, actual diksha will actually follow, because the essence of diksha is shiksha only. So some beginning is here. So that's what I wanted to speak about this morning. And if anyone has any questions on that, please ask, or ideas or whatever. And then after that, there are some other questions which others wanted to bring out. So first of all, is there any question or comment or suggestion about the what I've just been speaking about?
Maharaj, you said about this library with many books of different authors. So, like sometimes.
With restricted access. It's not that everyone can go in and pick up some Mayavadi's book. Those who require for research purposes. If you go to a research library, just like sometimes I've been to the National Library in Calcutta, or at the Vrindavan, they have the Research Institute. They don't just allow anyone to come. It's not like a public. It's public, but you have to be a scholar to come in. They let me. I tell I'm doing some research, which is true. And then they let me come and see like that. So it's not that it's open to everyone. So it's also certain books are not open. If we have, Prabhupada actually said in Mayapur, we should have a library with the books of all the acharyas and of the Mayavadis also. So, but it's not that we are encouraging everyone, hey, why don't you go over and read Sharirik Bhasha? It's not like that. A person who's an accepted scholar, and it's understood that if they're reading it, they're reading it for a purpose to serve our acharyas, not to nourish their own doubts. Such persons, or to indulge in doubts, then such persons may have access. That's what you wanted to say. Yeah. That we have such books in our library doesn't mean that we're going to be promoting Shankara's philosophy. Then anything else?
There is one person I met maybe one month back. He is doing some research work on establishing Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam.
Uh-huh.
He wants to have
a... Where is he?
He's in Chennai.
There was someone else in Andhra who's passed away now. He wrote some very good books in Telugu. I think one of them was translated into English, in which he was doing the same thing. The establishing the historicity of Mahabharata. There are many, another thing is there are many good scholars who we want to interact with. We may not agree with them on everything, but there are some very good, even there are some very good smarter scholars who have an interest to uphold Vedic culture. So we may disagree with them on some points, but agree with them on other points. That scholar I visited once in Chennai, Gurinath, I can't say in Tamil. He's a good scholar.
Another thing I was saying
maybe Vidvan Gauranga Prabhu will come and Krishna Kirti himself is a grihastha. We can't expect that every scholar is going to be a lifelong renunciate in the term. Renunciate, yes, they shouldn't be bhog vilasis. But we can't expect that everyone's going to be a brahmachari or sannyasi. In fact, traditionally most pandits are householders. So there should be some arrangement for supporting them also. What's happened traditionally in ISKCON is that people who get married, if they're not good at raising funds or somehow they don't get themselves into a position of being a temple president or something, then after years of studying Prabhupada's books and serving the mission, they're cleaning some floors in some toilet, or usually devotees do better than that, but it's lost to the society. So we want to have some arrangement for supporting Grihastha Vaishnavas. And if those who are studying as brahmacharis want to get married, then there shouldn't be any reason for them to stop their service. So some arrangement should be there like that.
In Srinagar, there is an arrangement of charitable society which is taking care of the Sanskrit pandits.
Yeah, there are different societies. We have to create a culture of that in ISKCON. At the moment, ISKCON, because we haven't adopted Vedic culture, then it runs on the Western idea, which is business culture. Then everything runs on money. As I say, if you can bring in money, then you're welcome as a devotee. Someone who can bring in money, even though he may be corrupt and doesn't have hardly any spiritual life whatsoever, they're generally much more welcome in our centers than someone who's completely useless at collection but is deeply interested in studying Shastra. There's an imbalance there, isn't there? Because we run on business culture, and that everything, even education, which Prabhupada specifically says should not be charged for, it's become a commodity, that you have to pay for it. Because we say, well, otherwise how will we run on? But because the culture hasn't been established that people with money should support that. The culture is you don't pay anything for, even for food and lodging, nothing. You pay nothing, but you do service. You have to serve the guru. Most of the time is spent in teaching, but also you have to do service and go on collection daily. The needs are not very much, and at the end you give some dakshina. All these things are required. But that one should pay is completely antithetical to Vedic culture. It's an insult, it's an aparad to our acharyas to sell what they have given freely. It's an aparad to Saraswati Devi. And then again it'll become business, that whatever is the most popular subject, and that's going on at Radhadesh, people can teach whatever, all kinds of things which are not connected even with, you can say tangentially connected, things like vastu and building relationships and all this kind of thing, which I presume is filled up of mundane psychology. So, and like that, in most of our temples are filled up with people who are being paid for what they're doing. So where's the devotional service? It's an exchange of money. And then it's expected, most of our, if you want anything, any service, whether it's editing or whatever, they expect some financial remuneration. So, like I said, we're running on business culture. So we have to establish the Vedic culture, where learning is given the highest honor. And by learning, we don't mean PhD, MSc, all this kind of thing, but Shastra Gyan. That should be respected. Brahmanas should be respected, not people with crooked Vaishya mentality. Somehow or other you get a position and then you're respected. But respect should be there for Vaishnava qualities, and particularly, what is that? Vidvan sarvatra pujyate. One in Vedic culture, one who is learned is respected everywhere. What's that saying? The king is respected in his own country. A fool is respected nowhere. But a pandit, I can't remember the whole word. A pandit, vidvan, he is respected everywhere. That's the culture.
I spoke in Mahaprabhu, with Vrindavan Mahaprabhu about his approach to education, Vaishnava education, about Shunya. So his way of presenting Srila Prabhupada's books, and we were just speaking of about presenting the same Prabhupada's books with the purports of the other acharyas, just like Bhakti Shastri or something. So we see that sometimes senior Vaishnavas, they bring a lot of information and explanations, different shlokas from other commentaries of other acharyas, to enrich, to develop the interest of the students and some. So, but his line of Vrindavan Prabhu is that he won't resort to those purports unless those purports and things which are in those purports or previous acharyas clarify some status of Prabhupada. In other words, apart from what Prabhupada touched in the purports, he won't go in the things which are explained by previous acharyas, which Srila Prabhupada didn't touch. So what is, Guru Maharaj, is your opinion of presenting teaching, like for example Bhakti Shastri?
That is very good. We should foster the understanding that Prabhupada is the representative of all the acharyas. At the same time, if we are to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission in this particular aspect that I'm talking about, we should also understand that although everything is there in Prabhupada's books that is required for everything is there for our spiritual advancement, but he hasn't put everything, every single point of philosophical understanding and every nuance of it is not in his books. And I don't think that Prabhupada even pretended, but I don't think Prabhupada claimed that. And Prabhupada himself in his book says to refer to other books also of previous acharyas. And he also wanted his disciples to write books. So, yes, the platform should be very much on Prabhupada's books. And I myself am reading a lot of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Mostly I'm reading his writings for the last 2 years, actually. But I did read Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, I'm not sure, 7 or 8 times all the way through first, and I do still refer to them. So I would hope that I do have a solid basis in Prabhupada's books. And again, it's a matter of attitude, not thinking that we're doing better, we're surpassing, but rather that we are, there's no question of surpassing Prabhupada. That's an absolutely foolish idea, if we even begin to think like that. But rather that if we can uphold that Prabhupada is indeed the representative of all the acharyas, as every guru in disciplic succession must be, then that will be the perfection of our endeavor. It is required in various specialized preaching fields, and there are many specialized preaching fields, that we have some knowledge of other things also. Just like I was in Bangladesh, and people would quote things to me to uphold their opposite under. They would quote things from Chaitanya Bhagavat. So I was obliged at that time to go to Chaitanya Bhagavat and see what is said within the context to rebut that. So I had to have a broader knowledge of Gaudiya Vaishnava literature than was directly given by Prabhupada. But as he himself writes in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, quoting Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, "Ore murha lok shuno Chaitanya Mangal, O you foolish people, listen to Chaitanya Mangal," which means Chaitanya Bhagavat, as it's presently known. So yes, we want that. Let people be very firmly fixed in this, in understanding Prabhupada, and then to serve Prabhupada better, we can also take up his instructions to study the works of previous acharyas also. This scholarship is a lifetime endeavor. It's not, scholarship is not acquired very quickly. And however great a scholar one may be, you can maybe be expert in one or maybe maximum two areas. Because knowledge of any subject is vast. People sometimes say about me, I'm a scholar, I laugh. I think it's just a joke. Where are the scholars today? If you see in the past, the best scholars today, I'm talking about Shastric scholars, they might be on the level of any ordinary scholar, say 100 years, even 100 years ago, where they were everywhere, every village there were scholars. The real scholars of the past, they were really very deep. So when we're talking about scholarship, we're talking about what it's kindergarten. We may spend our whole life and come to kindergarten level. But for those who didn't even enter the kindergarten, they may think, oh, great scholar. The main thing is we have to become devotees, not scholars. Being a devotee is the aim and object, not being a scholar. But this is one level of service that is required. As a matter of service, we may take this up. Otherwise, if we're requested, we can clean the pots our whole life and go back to Godhead that way. But there's service to be done in this area. So that's also required. Anything else on this? Alright, so I'll answer a question that Sri Giridhari Prabhu asked yesterday, and I said I'll answer it because otherwise everyone will ask me individually. My own kindergarten scholarship endeavor, I've many, many books to write, but I don't know how many will get done in this life. But the one I'm presently working on, have been working on for several years, on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, what is its status? Well, the almost final manuscript is under the process of heavy editing at present. I have just a few more things to add in, and probably until it goes to the press I'll be adding things. That's usually how I work with books, because the subject matter is unlimited and it drives my editors crazy. But that's the way it is. So, it's in what appears to be actually the final stages of editing. After that it will require proofreading and layout. Layout and proofreading can go on simultaneously. Layout will take quite some time because it's quite a big book and there are a lot of photos. This is likely to get delayed because I'm planning to go overseas, so hopefully the layout can start before I go overseas so I can see something when I come back. And then after the layout is done, then indexing will require to be done, because with a book with so much philosophy and instruction in it, then indexing will be useful to persons who want to take it as a serious study, or just devotees who think, oh, I remember reading something, let me look that up. So the value of a book of this nature is increased by its being indexed, so that will take about a month, and then after that it can be printed. So hopefully before the end of the year it should be printed. I'm still working on it, and then after that I'll go on to work on other books. You had some question or something?
Yeah, you touched this, you said that the devotees, they start to take shelter, you know, facing all these difficulties in the movement and in their own lives, they start to take shelter in mundane.
People start to take shelter in mundane education ideologies. Yeah.
Yeah. So now we see also that very powerful for a long time in movement preachers, you know, they fall down. You know, they dedicate themselves to the process. You know, but now devotees see they go away.
Mm.
So it's not easy to, you know, to find the balance in how to develop faith in the process. If you see
that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes In his analysis at the end of the chapter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his mercy on Chota Haridas, how he exhibited his mercy by rejecting him, and then again accepted him after he left his body. Severe lesson there. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he gave a list of points that could be learned from this incident. And one of them is that if an acharya does not maintain the principles of Krishna consciousness, then it causes chaos in Vaishnava society. It's one of the reasons why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even though he's the most merciful incarnation of Godhead, despite the pleas of all his followers, he felt it incumbent or necessary to reject Chota Haridas from his company. And that rejection, of course, he came back after leaving his body, because he's an eternal associate. So he's not that he's eternally rejected, but he showed that very severe. Prabhupada, in commenting on Chota Haridas, when he was asked that, well, so many of your sannyasis are falling down, Prabhupada said, I'm not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I need all the help I can get. So if someone falls down again, I give them a chance. But yes, there are many fall downs, and that's something else that should be, it should be researched. Why? Why is this happening? It shouldn't be. That someone executing the service of Guru might fall down is provided for in Shastra. That stated, Guru api avaliptasya karya karya majanataha utpanna pratipannasya parityago vidhiyate. A guru who is not properly situated, even though he's guru, who doesn't know how to instruct properly, or specifically said, who doesn't know the difference between that which is to be instructed and that which is not to be instructed, who is has an attitude of enjoying this material world, he should be rejected. This was spoken by Bhishma Dev to Parashuram, who was his guru. And Parashuram said, you have to follow my order, you're my guru. And he said, then Bhishma Dev said this, you're not giving proper instruction. You're telling me to break my vow not to marry, which from the, it was arguable from the point of dharma that Bhishma Dev should do this, because he either had to break one principle of dharma by breaking his vow, or break another principle of dharma, that a girl who he had touched and taken away, and who desired to marry him, he refused her. So he had to break one principle or other. But Bhishma Dev, who is one of the Dwadash Mahajan, Parashuram isn't, although he's an incarnation of God. It's very complicated to understand all these things. Therefore it's said that dharma is ati sukshma, very subtle and difficult to understand. So Bhishma Dev rejected him as guru and fought with him. So it is stated in Shastra, its provision is given there that one who is a guru who was instructing properly may fall away, but at the same time it's, and we have in the writings of Narahari, Sharka, in the Gauriya Vaishnava Sampradaya addressing this topic, but it's not expected to be as common an occurrence as it has become in our ISKCON today. So Guru Tattva, it's a very deep and difficult subject to understand, but it requires looking into. Yesterday I offered the understanding to you of what Madhvacharya had said, how he will always remain present in this world in three ways. One is in his deity, another in his commentary on Vedanta, and another in his seat. Who is sitting on his seat, he is present. So who is, as long as you're qualified to sit on the seat, then you are as good as Madhvacharya. But then if you jump off the seat to go and embrace some pretty girl, then you're not allowed on the seat. And so he's also present. So that's one way of looking at it. But it is a very deep subject, and which requires more understanding and clarification. A lot more understanding and clarification. So, unless there's anything else, we'll finish there. Hare Krishna. All glories to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.